Hello. Ah, now that I've got your attention, I'd like a quick word about how Cambridge 105 Radio is funded. Our job is to give a voice to those groups who may not otherwise be heard. That may be our support for local music or the charity of the month. You're wanting to know how you can help, aren't you? Well, you can support our advertisers. And when you use their services, say you heard about them on Cambridge 105 Radio. And you can make a donation. It all goes towards our upkeep. We're eco-friendly, but we do have a bit of an electricity bill. Visit cambridge105.co.uk and click on the donate button. And thank you for listening.
There's growing support for a national database of taxi drivers so councils know whether they have been banned in other areas. The bill, put forward by Cambridge MP Daniel Zeichner, is due to be debated in Parliament tomorrow. And Daniel is on the line now. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Julian.
So what first drew your attention to this?
Well, I was Labour's shadow minister with responsibility for taxis for 2 years. So I was following what was happening pretty closely. Of course, there have been huge changes with new technologies and so on. But one of the worrying trends in recent years has been the situation where people who wouldn't get a licence in one area can go to another council or elsewhere in the country and get a licence and work in the area where they originally refused, and there were some notorious cases around the country. So this is all about safety, improving the safety of passengers, and making sure that a system which is actually quite out of date is brought up to date a bit. I think there's more that needs to be done, frankly, but in a private member's bill, there's a limit to what you can do.
Yes, so if I'm understanding this correctly, at the moment it's possible for someone to be refused a licence in Cambridge, go down the road to Hertfordshire, get a licence there and be free to pick up passengers on the streets of Cambridge or outside the railway station or wherever they choose to ply their trade.
Indeed, not to ply as a taxi, but as a private hire vehicle.
Right.
You can do by phoning up and pre-booking. So, and this didn't used to be a problem. I suspect in the days when the legislation was first drafted, most people worked in their own areas. But in the modern world, people move much more, and there is some evidence that people are actually cheating the system. They don't tell the second licensing authority that they were turned down by the first one. Mm. And that's what this database will hopefully be able to stop.
And who would actually house the database? Who would look after it and maintain it?
Well, it's not a big administrative overhead. There is, in fact, already existing licensing databases, and there's a particular organisation that does this for a lot of councils at the moment. Although the bill doesn't specify it has to be them, and the local government association is working with them already on this. So the cost to councils is actually minimal, and we actually think that it will probably more than pay for itself because it will save time later on when at the moment they have further problems down the line.
I'm just wondering, if you are applying for a taxi licence, do most councils, are you aware if they have some kind of online system, or is it still done pretty much on pen and paper?
Well, there's a whole mix, actually, and this is the advantage in having, and I would keep local councils in charge of local licensing, because different areas have different issues. I mean, sadly, we saw in places like Rotherham, where there was horrible abuse going on, they've now have very, very high standards for fairly obvious reasons. But you don't necessarily need exactly the same standards in a rural area in another part of the country where you really don't have the same kind of issues. So there is a reason for keeping it local, but you've then got to guard against the downside of people playing the system.
Mm. And the differences between licensed cabs and private hire, where do the various rules differ on these things? But presumably, to be at a Cambridge taxi rank, you need to be licensed by Cambridge City Council.
I could probably do mastermind on this now, and the case law book is about 6 or 7 inches thick, so it's quite complicated. But essentially, people will be familiar with London black cabs, which are the classic kind of cab which you can flag down in the street. In Cambridge, of course, we don't tend to flag cabs down in the street. They work from taxi ranks, so they're the taxis. But taxis can also do what's called private hire work, which is where you book. Generally, in the old days, through a telephone call to an operator, but now also increasingly through apps and smartphones.
I guess people like Uber, of course, who we've heard a lot about in recent times, both within London and, of course, within Cambridge as well.
We have, and It is complicated, and there were proposals from the Law Commission a few years ago to completely overhaul the system. I think actually there is still a case for recognising the two types, the taxi, if you like, and the private hire, and I would stick with that because there are differences between the two. In Cambridge, obviously, we have a very good trade, and people do broadly know where they can go and find a taxi in Cambridge, which works pretty well. But one of the other things I learned when I was a shadow minister is you go around the country, each area has its different nuances and historical precedents. Obviously, in some places, the taxis are all a particular colour. There's been a bit of a debate around that in Cambridge recently.
Yes.
But a lot of this is for local decision, and I wouldn't change that. But what I'm trying to do is clamp down on the abuse and keep people safe, because that's the thing that's most important of all.
Now, you mentioned, of course, that you were previously a Shadow Transport Minister, this going through as a private member's bill. How does this work? What are the chances of it going through? Is it more or less likely to get cross-party support?
Well, it has cross-party support. I've worked with the government on this, so both the Conservative government front bench and the Labour front bench are supportive. The problem with the private members' bill process, which is very archaic and needs to be updated in my view, is that if any member of the House of Commons can speak on it and can speak for as long as they like, and if they do that, they can talk it out and filibuster, and I'm afraid there are a handful of Conservative backbenchers who do that sometimes.
So, and they're doing it for the fun of it, or are they doing it for the fun of it, or are they doing it because they have serious reservations about one bill or another?
No, I mean, this is a source of endless annoyance to the vast majority of members of Parliament, that a handful of people can basically wreck the process. Some of them have a sort of ideological hostility to any legislation, so they're not picking on me. They just try and stop everything, and that does happen on some Fridays, and I've seen it, and it can be quite depressing. But I'm hoping that even they will see tomorrow that this is actually needed everywhere, right across the country, and that it will go through. But it is the third bill for discussion tomorrow, so the first one has a much better chance, the second one has a reasonable chance, the third one's a bit knife-edge. So this time tomorrow I'll be getting a bit nervous, but I'll know by mid-afternoon tomorrow.
Okay, well, let's hope it goes well and it's given a fair hearing. Daniel, as always, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.